Eternal love.
Fucking nailed that.
That's a Whitney Houston song, right?
Okay, all right. I figured there was a love song with the word eternal in it.
There is, and I don't know any of the other words. We've got 3 a.m. Eternal by KLF. We've got Eternal Consumption Engine by Primus. Oh, we should have done that. I love me some Primus. How about you, little slap of the bass?
Slap of the bass, boy.
Jerry was a race car driver.
I want to change Total Eclipse of the Heart to Eternal Eclipse of the Heart. Eternal Eclipse of the Heart.
And I would like to give credit to the Weekly Planet, who one of their co-hosts called this movie The Eternals. T-U-R-D.
What's the Weekly Planet?
It's a podcast.
Okay. You listen to it?
I do, and they also tweeted it, so.
Huh. All right.
Turd. Get
I don't
it?
Care for that. I don't care for that nomenclature.
What do you care for? What do you want poop to be called? Called the shit poop.
No, I don't mind that. I don't care for the referring to of the movie in that term.
I can kind of see it.
Psh.
Psh. One goo, three, yeah. Jaws 3.
Mac and Goo.
King of Queens.
Mac and Goo.
Meryl Streep.
Mac Goo.
Entertainment.
I'm Goo.
And I'm Mac.
And this is the Mac and Goo program. We bring you eternal friendship.
And today we will be talking about the latest, but definitely not greatest in the MCU, Eternals.
No, the argument can be made of, is this the worst?
No, I don't think
it can.
That's an argument.
It can.
Don't agree.
Talk to Rotten Tomatoes, bruh.
Don't agree. Yeah, I mean, the reason the Rotten Tomatoes score is what it is because I think people are confused. This is unlike any other Marvel movie. It's not even close to any other Marvel.
Yeah, it's like
the
a Superman
thing
movie.
Is like
stinks.
A Thor epic, like Thor on steroids, the first one.
I think it's more like the second one than the first one. The first one is fish out of water hijinks.
Bring me your largest dog.
Yeah, it's a bit like this.
This doesn't really have any of that, but that's fine.
Yeah,
let's discuss it.
The whole first hour is that.
The whole first hour is an introduction that it goes somewhere, but it's very, very boring.
Yeah, it was boring, but so is the first Thor.
First Thor isn't that boring. The second Thor is boring.
It's pretty boring.
Either way, we're comparing it to a Phase 1 movie, which means that's not good.
Yes and no. So I think that's what I'm now realizing now as Phase 4 is kicked off. We've got to temper our expectations because Phase 3 left at such a high mark. We're back in the reset phase. We're back in the leadoff stage. And if we remember back to Phase 1, Phase 1 wasn't that good.
I refuse to temper my expectations. I want my Marvel good, and I want it now.
I'm just saying, if you look at the slate that Phase 1 gave us, first of all, Phase 4 has been better, but I think that our expectations should be Phase 1-ish. That's all I'm saying.
I refuse to accept regression.
That's fine. I totally agree with you that we should expect, you know, 40 doggers every time from Marvel. But again, we're table setting and we're universe building again, starting almost from Jump Street again. So when it's Phase 1-ish, I'm not that upset.
Okay, but I'm going to say, like, we shouldn't expect 40 doggers. That's expecting, you know, over the moon stuff.
Well,
I think we
sort of should, because what was four of Marvel's, like, last six? We're near 40 doggers.
I think we need at least 34, at least a B on all of them. And we should be, you know, wishing for at least a 36, 37, 90%.
To me, Black Widow was like a perfect 33, 34.
It was a fine
movie.
That and Shang-Chi,
and
fine.
This one, a little below that.
I'd put a little further below that. But we can get into that with hot dog scores in a second. Mac, give me some nuts and or bolts.
Anyways, credit to you. You have Gugamesh as your name this week. I was trying to do an Ajax thing here with J-Mac. I just couldn't make it work. So still J-Mac.
It depends on how you pronounce it. And then it kind of fits. Ajax, J-Mac.
It would not have worked. Goo, Eternals is a rated PG-13 action, adventure, and drama. And I think they did a pretty good job splitting those three. They did all three about the same.
They tried the action. I just found the action to be super boring until that third act.
I don't agree. I thought the action was visually some of the best stuff we've seen.
I disagree. I think the deviants were stupid, and I thought that a lot of the
build of the deviants, sure, but the powers of the Eternals was awesome.
I think the flips and the powers of the Eternals was very DC-esque.
Oh, I don't agree whatsoever.
Okay. All right. I think we watched different movies.
Yeah, you were like 6 feet to the left of me, so I think you had a bad angle. You were like,
I had
right
a bad angle.
Projector.
It was one of those things, like, you know, when you look from a certain angle, you can see one thing, and then from the other, it says something else.
Goo, this is a runtime of 157 minutes. That's right. 2 hours and 37 minutes. It's long. It's long, and I almost think it should have been a little bit longer to clarify some things, because once you get this long, you might as well make it 3 hours. 2 or 3 hours, nothing in between. Stay at 2 or go to 3.
So I was going to ask you, and we just did this with Dune. Should this have been a 10-episode series that they actually dove a little bit deeper into each character and made you care for the characters a bit more?
Not necessarily, because it's still 10 characters, so I don't know if you could ever have the
It could have been like Friends, though.
Do that, because they are introducing 10 new characters here. I think we could have had a little more. I think if we had like a battle in the past that was pretty cool, that would have helped a little bit at the beginning. But also, we sort of get it too. You don't need to over explain things. So either cut off like 20 to 30 minutes in the first hour and 15, or go to full 3 hours and give me that full first hour and a half, really getting to know the Eternals.
I mean, they over explain the shit out of a lot of the stuff in the past.
What I'm saying is I wanted more like drama and action at the beginning, and it was devoid of that for a little bit.
Yeah.
Goo, on Rotten Tomatoes, and again, we're recording before the audience score has come out. This is 53% from the critics, which is the worst MCU movie to date. What say you?
On a purely thumbs up, thumbs down scenario, pass, fail, I'm like teetering right on that pass, so I would give it the tomato. But
it passes.
If you're going to tell me this is just below that, I could kind of see that too.
For a reference point, Thor Dark World is at 66% and The Incredible Hulk is at 67%. This is significantly better than both.
The reason why I could see it compared to, say, a Thor Dark World is you have no connection to a villain in this movie. Until a certain point, then you have a little something, but it's a kind of an obvious thing that they go with by the end. So, you know, much like with Malekith.
No, it's not Malekith-esque. It's more Iron Man 1-esque, where there's a fox in the hen house, right? And the script gets flipped on you, and you don't love it, but it's very similar to that. And I think in that respect, you do have a little bit of a pull of emotions there with the human form villain, because there is sort of an overarching villain here. And
who
it's
feels
hard
empty.
To describe.
He feels empty.
Empty, but he's not even really a villain, because he's, you know, this has been something he's been doing for thousands, hundreds of millions of years. So it's not even like there's no ill will there between the
so you're saying
villain.
That as long as a villain does something long enough, then villainy's okay. As long as
well,
you're
not
consistent.
Even that, but there's the whole argument that happens in this movie is like, yeah, we could save this planet, but by doing so, we're preventing like 100 other planets from being created. So it's not like it is villainous, and it's not like it's a good argument to have there. It's a good philosophical argument. It's very Shakespearean, if you may. Goo, on Metacritic, this has a 52. Now, I think in general, a real blindsight of Metacritic and critics is these fun superhero comic book movies, because I think they have a really hard time evaluating them as one-offs. So, for example, we saw a lot of shitty reviews with Infinity War and Endgame talking about you had to watch other movies to understand this. Yeah, of course. This one is the most one-off, I think, of all the Marvel movies since Phase 1.
No, I think like Guardians is kind of a decent one-off. You could say that. Winter Soldier explains itself pretty well, and you could just watch that.
I mean, no connection to other movies.
No, I'm aware of that, but like, you know,
because
Ragnarok
Guardians has Thanos. So
Ragnarok also, like, they kind of introduce it and play with it as a different movie than the other two Thor movies, so that's almost a one-off. There are connections, but you can still say it's a one-off. This also talks about Thanos and the Avengers.
Okay,
so if you want to do that, then that's there too.
You're getting cute with the words, but what I'm saying is you wouldn't have had to watch any of the other Marvel movies. You could watch this and understand it as well as any of us could.
No, I agree with you, but I'm saying like the other ones are also one-offs.
Yes,
there are a bunch of
one-offs.
Black Panther is a one-off.
But this has the least amount of connections to other Marvel movies than any other Marvel movie since Phase 1.
Unless you believe that this is the table setter, so it actually has the most to do with all the other Marvel movies.
It's going, I believe, to, yeah, it's a good route, you know? It's a good base. We got to water this.
Oh, and actually, I will say, because I have been asked, do you have to watch Shang-Chi to see this? No. Do you have to watch really any, just know who the Avengers are. Know who Thanos is.
Also, to that point, which I was going to bring up in a bit, I think this makes Shang-Chi look a little better because Shang-Chi gets real weird in the end, and this is weird kind of from the beginning. So I think sort of what I expected this to do, it sort of goes down that path. Goo, this movie is written by, and first of all, there's four writing credits on this movie, which I think you could argue might end up being the weak point of the whole thing.
Well, it's so long. They needed help.
It's all over the place.
They needed help.
Chloe Zhao, who wrote Nomadland, which was the Best Picture winner this year. That's the only thing you would really know her from. Patrick Burley, who I've never heard of, did Peter Rabbit 2, The Runaway.
Well, his brother was great with The Quality Starts.
Yeah, Mark. He was also a quote-unquote additional writer on Ant-Man and the Wasp, so you don't get a writing credit.
You think he punched up the script?
Yeah. He does have two upcoming ones that are notable to us and to anyone that listens to this podcast. He's going to be doing the Black Knight movie, which is connected to this, obviously. Dane Whitman, and he's also going to be doing the Power Rangers reboot. So they scrapped the one from a few years ago and they're doing a new one. This gentleman's going to be writing that one.
I actually would love it if it was called Power Rangers reboot.
It's like a Mac V. Goo movie. And then we have the brothers Firpo here, Ryan and Kaz Firpo. That's right, Firpo. We would know them from absolutely nothing. However, they are doing an upcoming movie called Ruin, and Marge Bob is attached to that.
So I know Brian and Kel Fupa. But they're related.
Right. Yes. No, that's the deviant forms of those two. Good, this movie is also directed by Chloe Zhao, who did Nomadland. And again, that won Best Picture at your most recent Oscars. She won for Best Director, and also Frances McDormand won for Best Actress. So obviously she gained a lot of notoriety at the beginning of 2021. And I thought the direction here was actually really strong. There's some awesome visuals, great shots in this movie. There's a bit of a storytelling problem, I think, because they're trying to weave in so many different things. Goose, synopsis. The saga of the Eternals, a race of immortal beings who lived on Earth and shaped its history and civilizations.
And I think that might be the most interesting concept of the movie, because I always love the specials of, like, did aliens help the human race build the pyramids?
Right.
You know, have they helped... you know, Nazis with their technology and all that stuff. So, like, that's interesting. I don't know if they did enough with that, though.
Yeah, but also, I don't need an hour on how the Eternals influenced World War II either. You know, we get a good enough tidbit of that, and that's all I needed to imagine the rest of it.
I would have liked at least 90 minutes on them building the pyramids.
Goo, this movie stars Gemma Chan as Cersei, not the queen from that show you like. What's that show? Game of Thrones?
From the show I like. Specifically Just Me, though. From that little show you watched.
And Goo, honestly, I didn't love Gemma Chan in this. I don't think she can be a leading lady. I think she would have been fine as a side piece.
So I would say everyone in this movie, like, their ceiling was fine.
I don't agree. I think everyone else besides one other character was actually pretty awesome. But I didn't love Gemma Chan.
And I'm not blaming any of the actors. I just think this story lent to very boring characters, to very one-note characters.
Okay, but I'm sure talking about how it was acted.
Oh, okay. Well, fine. Acted. But I'm saying these characters in general, very one-note and not that interesting.
Fair. Oh, that's a fair point. I'm saying I don't think Gemma Chan did a great job here.
Okay.
Her power as Cersei is, and again, there's 10 Eternals here, and they all have a distinct power. Gemma or Cersei can change sort of inanimate materials that doesn't have a brain into any other material.
Do you think they should have called themselves the Eternals so that people would know that there's 10 of them?
Captain Planet and the Planeteers.
Well, she is a Captain Planet type of character.
She sure is. Mm-hmm. But she's sort of all of them? I don't know.
She should have just called herself Captain Planet and the Planeteers. I am all of them.
Richard Madden plays Icarus, who, of course, in mythology flew too close to the sun. His powers are very Superman-like in this. Not Superman-like, Superman-like. He can fly. He's got laser vision. Fucking laser beams. And I think he does a good job as a dickhead, really.
I think Superman Light is perfect because all of his powers seem just worse than Superman. He can do all the same stuff, but they're all just worse.
Yeah. Superman Jr., SJ. Then Angelina Jolie is here as Thena. Not Athena, but Thena. And she's basically Wonder Woman.
Kind of. I mean, her thing is she's kind of like Hela, where she can create her weapons out of nothing.
Good point. A Hela Wonder Woman mishmash. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point there. Salma Hayek is Ajak. Her powers are the most ambiguous. She can kind of heal people. She can erase minds.
Yeah, what is that little game that you played with the healer? Overwatch. There we go.
Overwatch, where everyone had a role on the team. Yes.
Yeah, she's the Overwatch healer,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, there you go.
Also, you think she got her name from a dish soap?
Right.
What's her real name? Yeah. Francis? Smoked her.
Kumail Nanjiani as Kingo.
Yeah.
He could shoot lasers out of his hands, not his eyes. And he offered quite a bit of comedic relief throughout the movie.
Would you argue the only bit of comedic relief? Although I think Brian Tyree Henry tried to, like, that character was also supposed to be there for it. Didn't necessarily
attempt, yeah.
Hit. Neither characters were overly hilarious, but this one, Kingo, definitely had more of a better batting average. Not even necessarily any type of power to it, but a good batting average.
Kingo and his pal there, Karoon,
he was
were
good.
Hysterical.
Yeah, he was good.
Part.
No, I thought the pal there was very, very funny. Kingo was pretty good.
Good 1-2. Good Jordan and Pippen combo. Leah McHugh plays Sprite, and her powers are a tad confusing as well.
She's Loki.
She can duplicate herself like
she's
Loki.
She's
she
just
can go
Loki.
Invisible. Yeah.
She's
yeah,
a small
a
Loki.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, a bit like that. She was decent as far as child actors go. Brian Tyree Henry as Fastos Goo, I thought he was horrendously bad. The couple scenes where he needed to show despair and anger, he was fucking terrible.
I thought he was horribly misused because I actually do think he's a very good actor. He's in the show Atlanta, and he's great as Paperboy. I think he's my favorite character on that show.
Yeah, he was terrible in this. Was not good.
Yeah.
And I just didn't care for him, which is a bummer because he's an important character. And his power in this is he basically does machines.
He's the best at machines.
He's the best at machines.
That makes you then question, like, okay, so if you put him in a room with, say, an alive Tony Stark, spoilers in Endgame, Tony Stark dies, Shuri and, like, Donatello, who wins in that match? Who builds the machine the quickest?
Probably the Eternal.
Right, because he can do all the hand stuff just with his mind as opposed to everyone else actually needs stuff.
If Tony doesn't have Jarvis, he's done. He's out.
Although, if it's like a battle to the death, I would still take Rocket over this guy, because this guy doesn't seem to have the killer mentality.
Okay. Goo, Lauren Ridloff as Makari.
Mm-hmm.
She's the deaf character, and she's actually deaf in real life. I think that's pretty cool. So that's a couple times this year we've seen deaf characters do a great job. Of course, we're speaking about A Quiet Place 2 as well. And her powers are Quicksilver Flashlight.
So really I would fast. Say when ranking visually how it looks on the screen, I would still take how they did Quicksilver in the X-Men over this, but this might be better than both Quicksilver in the MCU and the Flash in the DCEU.
I like that they didn't leave a stupid like blaze on it. She just
I hate the blaze. The blaze is the worst thing. And that might be like, I don't love Ultron, but the way that they have like Scarlet Witch with like the red like mysticism around her, and then like Quicksilver with the blue streak, I hate that.
It's like the puck tracer that they tried in the 90s.
Well, no, but that worked. That was great because you knew where the puck was. It's tough to know where this black puck
staring
is
at the players
on the white ice. I never know where the black puck is.
Goo, two more Eternals. Barry Keoghan or Kian. I don't know how to pronounce that. It seems like an Irish lad. As Druig.
Yeah.
He looked the part. I thought he was best cast.
So I think that he looked the least like an actor. Like I'm saying, like he's not a good looking fella.
Right.
But he looked the part of a dickhead that you wanted to hate at the beginning, and you kind of did, but he had a point.
Loose cannon. He was a loose cannon. Mm-hmm. The loose cannon character they needed.
Yeah.
And then Don Lee is Gilgamesh, who was super campy and sort of jumped the shark once for me. But I also, he made me laugh a couple times as well.
Yeah, he was my favorite at certain points of the movie, but his powers were like, is he putting on Hulk hands?
Basically, right? He's got movie Hulk hands. I said, I don't know, he's kind of thing-like when he like hulks up. He's got a, I don't know, rock skin, and then he does some punchy.
Also, and maybe I just don't know these characters well enough, but kind of ambiguous in like how much they can take. Like, they're getting thrown around, they're getting thrown through stuff, they're getting beaten the piss out of, and they're fine. And then suddenly, at certain points, they're very open to being killed.
I think it's like Thor and Loki. I think when they're battling someone of equal or greater powers, they can be easily damaged.
Mm-hmm.
But like on Earth, they can like fall off a cliff and be fine. That's sort of how I interpret it.
Okay, but these guys are always on Earth, and sometimes they're not fine.
Well, when they're fighting people of their nature.
Okay. Okay.
That's sort of what I'm saying. And then we have four characters, non-eternal, that play a big part in this movie. One is Kit Harington as Dane Whitman, who is Cersei's human boyfriend. She has a prior relationship with Icarus, which we learn. Kit Harington is not in this much, Goo.
No.
Not in this much. He's going to matter more in the future, but he's not in this movie much.
Right. And fine for the amount of time that we got him.
Yeah, no complaints.
He tried to tell some jokes. They weren't necessarily great. He brings up Doctor Strange a couple times, but it's fine.
Yeah, did his job. Harish Patel, who I mentioned earlier as Karun, who is Kingo's assistant slash cameraman. Very funny.
He was very effective with the time given to him.
Yes. Yep. We had David Kay, who voiced Arishim, who is the Celestial in this movie. And as far as what Celestials can do, I am still very unclear of. They can sort of do whatever they want. But Arishim plays a big role in this movie. And it's the first instance in the MCU where Celestial has actually mattered. They've referenced them a couple times, but in this movie is the first time they actually matter, which I liked that finally coming to fruition. And then finally, Dan Stevens voices Crow, who is the lead deviant. Doesn't have many speaking lines, yeah. But I assume Stevens did the CGI stuff too, the mocap.
I think that's a waste of Stevens. I think Stevens is actually a very good actor. You could have used him somewhere else.
Yeah, I agree. And also Crow, this deviant leader, basically gains the powers of the beings that it defeats.
Right.
A little rogue-like where it can steal superpowers.
Right, and even though there was an actor that's attached to this, and you know he does gain like a more of like a sentient mind, although it's always alive, of course, but you know it becomes more human-like, I found the deviants to just be faceless bad guys. Very, very boring.
Faceless bad guys, but they did look cool for faceless bad guys.
They did, but also, like, my favorite Marvel movies, my favorite superhero movies, my favorite comic book movies are the villains that you can side with, and not much going on here.
I agree with you, but the more we end up learning about the deviants, you also sort of understand them. You don't necessarily side with them, but they have more depth than most other faceless villains.
Yes, but not enough for me.
I would agree on not enough.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there. So, Goo, in general, I think this movie, after seeing it and also, of course, leading up to it, I'm sort of convinced this was never going to – it never had a chance to be a top-tier Marvel movie. It had too much to do. It had too much it needed to do. And to your point about a miniseries, I don't think you could accomplish – what this movie wanted to do in a 2.5-hour runtime. I just don't think it was going to be possible.
And I also think that with Marvel movies, we are so used to them being fun. This was not very fun. And I think that might be its biggest issue.
I had some fun.
Some fun over 2.5 hours might not be enough fun.
And again, that's what I sort of relate back to, say, First Avenger or Thor movies. There's some fun in there. They're not fun throughout. Marvel becomes what you're talking about, but it's very phase one-ish in that it's pigeonholed in what it needs to do, and they had the sprinkle fun in there after the fact.
But at least with phase one movies, they would focus on one character more, and they would at least get you on the side of that one character, where this one had to spend more time with more characters, and it wasn't able to accomplish that as well.
Yeah, but I also would say the first Thor movie in the first Avenger don't really win you over on either of those two characters.
I love the first Avenger.
I would say it falls short of doing that for those two characters. And in this movie, I am not necessarily won over on any of the 10 characters, but I do think it does as good a job as those two movies do for those two characters.
I disagree on both of those, because I feel like, especially with first Avenger, you at least felt the heart and the personality of that character. Granted, those are human. Well, Captain America is a human character. Thor is human like God. But,
you know, yeah, you're right.
One-note characters that lack humanity.
Steve Rogers.
Yeah.
That movie more falters in the third act.
Right.
Comparing Thor and First Avenger to each other is not fair.
Okay.
That's a fair point.
Do you want to get into
Let's get into the Octagon before we start spoiling here.
Mac, fun factor, and there were parts of this movie specific to the action that was fun, but I do feel like the funnest action, you kind of had to wait until that third act, but there was still some stuff going on in that act where you're like, where are the Avengers?
Goo, powers are fun. We saw like 15 different powers in this movie. And again, I think the way they were conveyed visually, I really enjoyed.
But the issue is that, so there were a lot of powers, but it's a lot of the powers we've already seen from other characters. And I like it better with other characters.
They're still fun.
No, I know that.
Not saying the most fun.
And like,
look, they're still fun.
I like the stuff that the Flash character did. That was very, very cool. And then... actually, spoilers. Let's wait on that. But
well, even in that first act, when Icarus pops up for the first time and uses his laser vision and smashes into the Deviant, that's fun.
Yeah,
that's fun.
No, because then that gets into the question of like, why haven't humans been talking about these Eternals their entire lives and passing
on
stories?
They've been laying dormant, and they do.
But
they talk about all these
things. Stories.
Yeah, there's stories. There's lore of them. There's
then why haven't we heard about that before this movie?
Because the Marvel movies aren't talking about the humans.
I know that,
but
they
need to talk about the heroes.
But no, Steve Rogers is a human. This is something that he would talk about. This is something that Bucky Barnes would talk about.
I don't think they would.
It is. This is the stuff that they'd be like, oh, remember those gods that came to the earth and fought those giant monsters?
How often have you and I or you and any friend ever talked about mythology? Unless you're Davey, never.
Mac,
it never happened.
If there were gods that lived on this earth and fought giant monsters 5,000 years ago,
stories
we
like that.
Would talk about that.
No, we don't. People wrote it down thousands of years ago, and it's on the sides of caves. We don't talk about it now.
Guys, Mac has lost his mind.
We make movies about it.
Right. So why aren't there any
That's
movies
it.
In
there
this?
Is.
Oh, my God.
There is. Now you know about all the movies in the MCU?
Yeah. You could see it in Spider-Man Far From Home on the plane. They're scrolling through movies. Satisfactor, were you satisfied?
I kind of teased at the beginning. I was very satisfied to see a Celestial in an MCU movie, and I still don't know what Arishem or any Celestials can do, mm-hmm. but I thought the coolest shot of the movie is when Arishem is next to Earth. I thought that was really cool.
No, there were definitely some really cool shots. The cinematography is really, really good in this very big, wide, scaping shots. Scoping? Scaping? Whatever it is. Satisfied-wise, by the end of the movie, yes, because you get like a big info character dump by the end, and that kind of makes up for like 2 hours and 20 minutes into this movie. I was saying to myself, I don't know if I needed this. I don't know if I really needed this in my MCU. Okay. But they gave us a bunch of stuff in that final 15 minutes where you're like, all right, fine.
In that respect, it's a lot like Far From Home.
No. From Home, at least, once again, has a character that I like and has a personality, and it's a little more three-dimensional than what we got in this movie. Stop comparing it to other MCU movies.
No, because Far From Home, the whole runtime, you're like, and then the end, you're like, whoa.
That actually
That's
was you at the theater.
About.
That's
what
the people said to Mac. You can't come here anymore with your noises.
I'm not saying any character in this movie is as good as Peter Parker. Tom Holland is Peter Parker. What I'm saying is the movie, you're like, I don't know if I like that. I don't know if I like this. But by the end, you're like, that was cool.
Well, no, but like this movie, though, like the mythology that it was giving to the MCU, I was saying, I kind of wish they weren't adding this to the MCU because it's going to confuse everything. And I don't necessarily love it.
Let me stop you right there. To that point, essentially what you're saying is you wish the MCU was just done then. Because this is the only way that
If this is
go.
Where we're going, maybe.
Yeah, this is the only way they can go to broaden the universe. It's the only way they can go.
I just think Eternals are very, very boring. And they're already saying now that we don't need a sequel. They're like, they already
really
told
old.
Their story. We're fine.
They're really old, and old people are very boring.
That's a good point. Old people are boring. Speaking of boring...
Barometer... ticked the first like hour for me, hour 10. I actually checked my phone once to see how far we were in, and they just do so much explaining and catching up to do in the first hour that you're like, I just want to see something cool.
Yeah, I was very bored throughout. Equator, I'm right around there, actually.
Get that cone out of my face.
I'm right around
Get
there.
Get that cone out of my face.
Halloween, will this movie wane over time? And, it really depends on where they go next and if they need this as like a stepping stone into the weirder stuff, into the better stuff. But as of right now, yes, it could go down for me. It could also go up. It's definitely not going to stay where it is.
Again, it's really long, so I don't necessarily want to keep rewatching this movie. That said, it could mean a lot going forward, and I just don't... Like, if it means a lot and there's a lot of things that connect back to this, obviously the score is going to go up a little bit. But if it doesn't attach to as many things as I'm hoping for, and the fact that it's 2 hours and 37 minutes, it might go down.
I think they have to look at this. Even if it bombs at the box office, even if it does terrible with Rotten Tomatoes, they still need to use this as the stepping stone into something bigger.
Oh, they have no choice.
They have to.
Yeah, they're too deep in. Yeah, for sure.
Pants Ten City, Excite Bike Mania. Mac, what got you going?
I referenced it up top with the Satisfactor. Again, there are some really cool visuals in this. The shot of Arishim, the Celestial, literally like floating next to Earth in space and being like three times larger than the planet Earth was fucking cool.
Hello, Mac. This is William Hung. G-Bang. Hello, Mac. This is William Hung. And you deserve so much credit. I wish you would mention Spice World on the show more.
G-Bang. G-Bang.
Hello, Mac.
What do you got for your credit union?
Thanks, William. To me, this one was pretty easy. This goes to Beefy Kumail, and I guess, you know, assist to his cameraman, provided much needed comic relief throughout the film. And again, it's really hard to say one person was the star of the movie when there was 10. And, you know, I guess Cersei got the most screen time, but she definitely didn't have the most star power. So I would say, you know, in terms of did the best with the time they had, it was Kumail.
Okay, and also give credit to his personal trainer. But I would also, do you think that he showed up to the set on the first day being like, I got so jacked for this Marvel movie. And then he looked at Brian Tyree Henry's like, wait, I didn't have to?
It's true. Brian, why don't you try a little bit? You know, as one fat to another, why don't you try a little bit? You're making a lot of money.
For those of you tardy to the Mac and Goo party, we rate everything on a 40 hot dog rating system. Mac, I will go first. Number one, there was sex in this movie.
Sex. First time sex on screen for the MCU. Sensual.
Pretty good. Real sex. Sensual. Yeah.
They made love.
It was sensual, right?
There was no fucking here. They made love.
Like, you could feel the penetration. Like, you knew when it went in. So credit to them on that. Like I said earlier, I like the idea of the human race and outside help to help with the development. I didn't necessarily need all the flashbacks. You can just kind of tell me and then maybe show one flashback of like, oh, humans are actually terrible, because we get it. Humans are bad. You don't have to keep on telling us over and over and over again. The movie is great in terms of diversity and representation. So tip of my cap to them on that.
Yeah. And again, Brian Tyree Henry, as much as I didn't like him as Fastos, was one half of the first not male female couple in the MCU. So it's him and another male.
Yeah.
First time we've seen anything like that. So
yeah.
Kudos to Marvel finally doing it.
If you're going to keep on adding more and more characters, like, they can't all just be straight white guys.
Right.
Kumail Nanjiani was pretty funny in it. I agree. I liked the final fight. I liked a lot of the final fight, at least. Flash, those cool type of powers there. My question always is, where are the Avengers? Because now, looking back at all the Avengers stuff, you're like, well, or actually, no, looking forward at all the Avengers stuff, you're like, well, where are the Eternals? Let's figure this out, too. I didn't necessarily love the Deviants or the fighting with the Deviants. It all just kind of seemed not like a waste of time, but like it really didn't go anywhere with the fights, and they weren't even necessarily like visually stunning to me either.
Yeah. And I think this is sort of the point I made earlier about spending more time, even though it's 2:37, you could have done in that first hour had like a prior Deviant versus Eternals fight. Now, they showed a little bit of it, but you could have had a lot more of that to build the Deviants up a little more. Because I think, to your point, yeah, they are certainly lacking, because they're sort of like the C story to this whole thing.
And really, like I said, too, up until maybe 15, 20 minutes left, I was like, this is fine, but I don't really want it in my MCU. It doesn't really, it doesn't scream MCU to me. And a lot of what they're doing here is kind of boring. And I feel like it's just going to muddy the water of the storytelling of what they're trying to do moving forward. But the last 20 minutes is a big old dump of stuff. And all the stuff in the last 20 minutes is pretty goddamn cool. So that helps it out. But outside of that, I didn't really love the plot of the movie. I didn't really love the characters in the movie. I don't really love the movie. And I'm right at like 25 dogs.
Well, I don't really love you for that.
Aww.
Goo, I really liked all the powers, how we saw the powers on screen. I also think that inevitably this is going to be connected to so many other things. And as the movie's going, I'm sort of thinking about that too. So this is important big picture wise. I like that. This is our first same-sex MCU couple. So again, kudos for that. I'm also super intrigued about where we go from here. Now, that doesn't necessarily make this movie better, but obviously you can only think about that because of what happens in this movie. There's a lot of paths, a lot of avenues to go down now. I also think because this gets pretty weird, it makes Shang-Chi look better because Shang-Chi got real weird at the end. So maybe I'll add a dog to Shang-Chi.
Yeah.
For me, I have this like right in the 30, 31 range. And I'm thinking like I have Age of Ultron at 32, which I like more than most. Seemingly, I'm probably going to like this one more than most. I like this at like 30, 31, which is 16th on the year for me and like 22nd, 23rd in the MCU for me. And just below this, to give you a little more context, I have Thor. I think First Avengers right in the same range. And I also like this more than Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Right. So I have this at 19 on the year for me. I have it like right below the Fear Street movies, right above Mortal Kombat. So like it's kind of in that juicy area of like, eh, like there's some fun stuff, but overall not great. And then for movies, for MCU movies, I have it number 26, which is just above Iron Man 2, Thor the Dark World, and The Incredible Hulk. And maybe within time, so this might be last.
On your shit Rushmore.
It's on my shit Rushmore.
No, I don't think any Marvel movie from here on out will be as bad as Hulk or Dark World.
We don't know that because apparently Dark World matters. Iron Man 2 stinks. Iron Man 2 is real bad.
Iron Man 2 is bad.
Iron Man 2 is really,
I used to rate
2
and 3 similarly. Iron Man 3 has way more redeemable qualities than Iron Man 2.
3 is fun, kind
of. And House Party Protocol is one of the coolest things.
3 is ridiculous, but it's at least fun. Yeah. And no one's using Iron Man stuff to make whips.
And especially now that Shang-Chi took a poop on the Mandarin, and I still like a lot of that shit, yeah. Iron Man 3 holds up.
Mac, you ready to spoil?
Sure.
Spoiler. So, if you have not seen this movie, hey, join us in the audio version or jump back on the video after you see it. We are going to spoil right now. I don't want to ruin the movie for you.
Spoiler free.
Well, no, it's just because we are live right now. I'm just trying to make sure that people know this is spoilers. Now,
the only kind of spoiler we gave away at the top here is Arshem the Celestial, sort of a bad guy, but not really.
But the real bad guy is
Icarus, but not really. Because Icarus goes back in a Loki-like way. And I think he's dead, maybe? I don't know.
I'm not going to lie.
He's a bad guy for a brief moment.
And Davey told me not to do it, but when Icarus killed himself at the end, I laughed. I thought it was so stupid.
When Cersei figures out that Icarus has known the whole time, the jig was up, Davey leaned over to me and goes, he's a really bad guy.
How did she not know, like, say, at the beginning of the movie when he showed up, when the Deviant was there? Because that's when I knew.
I thought Ajax was actually going to be the quote-unquote bad Eternal, and that ends up being Icarus. But you knew there was something up with Icarus, especially from the jump there. And especially since he pushed away from Cersei, you knew there was a whole thing that was going to boil over at some point.
Also, I think I made the point a little while back that I am sick of the Superman character being the bad guy in the story. And this just plays right back into it.
I think what happens, though, is it's the only way it's going to work because Superman's always the most powerful and you have to have all the other ones against the most powerful one. I get being sick of that, but it's the only option if you're going to do that story.
And then once again, the final fight on the beach there or on the polar cap, I don't know where it is.
Some sort of volcano or something.
But either way, the Flash versus Superman fight, pretty dope.
Fastos and Makari versus Icarus is really cool. I really like that. And then simultaneously, you have Athena versus Crow. And then you have Cersei climbing the volcano with Druig and the little Sprite. Sprite. That's her name. They balanced all that really well. So to your point, the last 20 minutes is pretty cool.
I think it would have been funny if whoever is in charge of S.H.I.E.L.D. right now or whoever's in charge of the Avengers right now, it flashed to them for a second and they're watching it on like the news and they're like, should we do something about this?
let's wait a second.
Yeah.
And for real here, let's get into the two most important parts of the movie which are the mid and post credit. So again, hop off if you have not watched the movie. Goo, the mid credit scene. Mid credit scene, Harry Styles pops up as Eros/Star Fox along with Pip the Troll, who I have no idea who that is. They teleport onto the Eternal ship. Mm-hmm. And at this point, on the ship is just Makari, Druig, and Thena. And he says, or Pip introduces him as the brother of Thanos. And he also presents this little celestial sphere thingy that we saw throughout the movie. So he also has one. So you're like, whoa, Thanos' brother. This means something. I don't know what, but it's cool.
That's the thing is that I don't necessarily know who either of these characters are, but I am so intrigued. And we leaned over after this. We're like, hey, Davey, is that a cooler character than what we've seen in this movie? And he's like, yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah,
I'm in.
Davey had like a, oh,
yeah,
when he pops up. And I also think, and we didn't talk about it because we're now just getting into spoilers. Ajak makes a comment about how Thanos' snap and then the Avengers' decision to bring everyone back like fundamentally changed her. So Thanos sort of plays a role in how the Eternals worked, which I think affects the Celestials, and therefore Eros means a little bit more. So I'm wondering, like, is Eros now a Celestial Slayer? How does he play into it?
That'd be cool.
What are his powers? What does he do? I have no fucking clue.
No, and that was definitely super intriguing. And then you get to the next post-credit scene, which you had to do a little more digging, but also pretty cool. And then the discussion after the movie of the voice that speaks there, is that Mahershala Ali's blade?
Right. So the post-credit is Dane Whitman, and this is teased a couple times throughout the movie. Apparently his family has this long past, and there's this box with this medieval sword in it, and he opens it, and apparently it's the sword of the Black Knight. And as he goes to touch it, there's an off-screen voice that says, "You sure about that? Are you sure about that's not why?"
That's what happened, actually.
But the voice, and I didn't recognize it instantly, but Davey did. Davey said, "Was that fucking Mahershala Ali?"
I definitely recognized it as a deep-voiced, definitely like an African-American man.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And once he said that was possibly Mahershala Ali, my mind ran rampant with possibilities. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about the Dark Knight, or the Black Knight. Sorry, not the Dark Knight. I don't know anything about the Black Knight, but if he's connected to Blade, or if the sword is connected to Blade, I am infinitely more intrigued by how this plays out. Because Blade is an awesome character, one of my favorites. Mahershala Ali as Blade is going to be fucking sick. And I'm pretty sure. So I spent a week on the internet. No one had anything about this character. I was browsing Reddit today, and finally someone else on Reddit said, "I'm pretty sure that's Mahershala Ali as Blade, as that voice." And I said, "That's fucking sweet. That's all the confirmation I needed." One person on Reddit.
So the stuff with Jon Snow and Harry Styles was dope. And once again, we've said this, if the best stuff in the movie is the post-credit, there's something wrong with the movie. I do think this is the best stuff in the movie, but the final 20 minutes of the movie at least was a decent build-up to this, and it wasn't terrible.
I agree.
Want to go through some plot stuff, Mac?
Yeah, let's run through some plot stuff. So this movie opens up with a bit of a Star Wars like scroll to explain like the background on Celestials, Eternals, and Deviants. And it's sort of good enough. It gives you a decent enough understanding. But the first hour of this, actually, I felt a lot like the first hour of Dune, where I was just confused. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm thinking I'm liking it, but I'm just trying to figure it out mostly. And it also shows you how deeply the Ten Eternals affected mankind on Earth and how they played into that. So that was kind of cool. But the most important part they get to is they thought they extinguished the last Deviants in the 1500s. And since then, they've all split in different segments of the world. You have Thena and Gilgamesh in Australia. Druig goes off with his own followers, ends up in the Amazon. Sprite, Cersei, and Icarus end up in England. And then, of course, Cersei and Icarus split. That brings in Dane Whitman. Kingo is in India and has been a Bollywood star for like 100 years as his great-great-grandfather and stuff.
That was
pretty funny.
Yeah.
Fastos is living in some suburban U.S. city. I forget which one. And he's got a family now. And then we find Makari living on the ship, like buried in the sands of Iraq. Is Ajak in like Montana or some shit? I'm sure they said it, but I missed that too.
It was definitely Middle America. Was it in Phoenix?
Yeah, somewhere out west with a big ass farm. And Ajak is the leader, and we you know figure this out early on. One of the early on things too we see is Thena's mind is kind of going wonky, which is really a big reason why they split off, especially since the Deviants are gone. We also, the first 15 minutes of a movie, a Deviant attacks Cersei and Sprite. Icarus saves them, and that sort of jumps off the whole, we got to go see what's going on, get the team back together. We find out Ajak is dead. But more importantly, we find out Ajak has gifted Cersei this celestial sphere that puts her in charge of the Eternals and gives her a connection with Arishem, which is sort of how they explain things as the movie goes on. Like, that's their that's their exposition, really.
Right, and then we find out later that Icarus feels slighted by this, but it's because him and Ajak have a different view on what they should be doing with their power.
Right. Ajak sort of makes a turn because of humans and mankind, and Icarus wants nothing to do with that, and she gives it to Cersei because Cersei also loves all the people of Earth. So they get everyone back together. You get this cool moment where, hey, fuck it, I'm in type of stuff. And they,
you when son
they
of a bitch, Kingo, I'm in.
Yeah, you son of a bitch. Kingo is playing Icarus in a Bollywood film, which is kind of funny. You get Kingo's assistant, Karun. Am I saying that right? I don't quite know. They use Kingo's private jet. He's a kajillionaire. They end up in Australia to go get Gilgamesh and Athena. And this is where Cersei finally uses that celestial sphere to talk to Arishem. And it's at this point where, like, it's like the first reveal, I guess, for lack of a better term. She learns that the Eternals were sent to Earth to protect this seed on Earth that Arishem planted from the Deviants. And then we later learn that the Deviants were actually first created to kill all of the predators on Earth so that seed could grow. But then they sort of did what Ajak did. They went off script, and so the Arishem had to control them. And then once the seed is done growing within the planet, a new celestial emerges, but it destroys anything and everyone on the planet. And so now this is where the Eternals got to make a decision, right? Do we stick with Arishem or do we save the people of Earth? Are we going to be heroes or are we going to be villains? The real kicker, though, is we learn that the Eternals have done this countless times. I don't know if it's 10, 20, hundreds, thousands, but they've forgotten all this because every time Ajak has erased their memories. And so this is why Athena's memory and mind is kind of fucking around. And then we eventually learn Icarus is also in on it. His memory has never been erased. So you end up with the whole Icarus Superman versus everyone else battle towards the end. They think Druig is going to be the one to defeat the Celestial, but I think the writing was on the wall from the beginning. Once you knew Cersei could change matter into other matter, you knew she was going to be the main player at the
Easily.
End there.
Yep.
The way it plays out, I really liked. Once we got the explainy bullshit out of the way, the last like hour and a half, I really liked.
That's still even too much for me. So much of that first part of the movie is so explainy and quite obvious to like certain points, and every turn that they try to take where it's like, this is happening, it's like, okay, well, you kind of, you know, showed your hand a while ago.
It is a bit predictable. I agree, but I don't know if it was the way it shot or the visuals. I didn't feel
it's a nice looking movie.
Yeah, yes, that is for sure. You know, at the end when everything's kind of winded down, you think stuff's over. You know, the Eternals, and we lose Ajak, who was killed by the Deviants. Gilgamesh gets killed during a Deviant fight, saving Athena. And then Icarus kills himself by flying into the sun, which just is silly. A little on the nose, but what are you going to do?
It was silly.
And what we have left here is Sprite, who gets turned into a human by Cersei's remaining powers.
I'm sorry. Now, so, at that point, too, I was like, what the fuck are her powers? What is this?
Well, the whole Unimine thing. Like,
it was so funny. She's like, hey, we have a little bit of power left in this Unimine rock. You want me to turn you into a human?
I'm also.
Can it do that?
Yeah. Can it? Like, what are we doing here? And I also, they don't say anything about her powers. So does she still have her powers, but is now mortal?
I think she's just a human now. I think she's just a human now.
So no powers at all.
I don't think so.
Okay. So we have Sprite, human Sprite. We have Cersei, Phastos, and Kingo, not a Kangol hat, but Kingo.
Who's the kangaroo Pokemon?
Kangas? No. Is it Kang? There's no Kang. There's Kangaskhan, but he's not a kangaroo.
No, it's Kang. Is this Kangas? Shime, help us out.
Those four remain on Earth. And then Druig, Athena, and Makari jump back on the ship and go out into space looking for other Eternals.
Yeah.
So then we're like, oh, we're done. We're done. We're done. We're done. We're done. We have Dane talking to Cersei. We're going to have this nice, lovely moment to end this MCU film. What happens? The coolest part of the whole movie, minus the post credits. Arishem shows up. Everyone on Earth can see the celestial Arishem looking into the Earth, which is cool.
How are they going to explain this? That's what I want to know.
This is going to change everything on Earth. And then he grabs all of the Eternals remaining on Earth off Earth and then just dips out. So my question is, is he able to gather the other three that are on the ship? Or does the next time we see the Eternals, he goes to do that and Eros is there and Eros stops it? Mm-hmm. I'm a little confused. I'm not confused. Intrigued by how that plays out.
Does Spider-Man No Way Home have to start out with like Doctor Strange being, well, I have to go do this now?
Yeah, good question. Is this set after the events of that movie? Is it set during?
No, because I think it's set during. So this is after everything that's happened. It's modern day, like modern day MCU. This is exactly where we are right now. But let me ask you a question.
Post Spider-Man.
Do you know this? When was the original release date for these movies supposed to line up?
Oh, I forget. I didn't pull that for this one.
Okay, because that might play a role, but also it might not. They might have just fixed it.
Yeah, and there's also an important note in here, and plays into Arishem not necessarily being a villain. He says he's going to use these Eternals' memories to decide whether or not the humans will be spared. He doesn't care about the humans.
Oh, my God. I want Eternals 2 to just be like a giant home movie of just showing fun memories.
And then we get at the end, the Eternals will return. We get our mid and post-credit scenes, leaving us with all sorts of questions and possibilities.
You got 21 questions? You got a... They all about us?
So, again, where are the rest of the Eternals? Those three that went out, along with Eros and Pip the Troll, do they find more Eternals? That's obviously what they're looking for. Or does Arishem get to them? What are Eros' powers, aka Star Fox? What the fuck can he do? Secondly, how does the Black Knight play into this?
Just looking cool as fuck.
Yeah, and if and when he does, how is he connected to Blade? Is that even Blade? How does that turn out? That's
right.
It's really cool to think about.
Are we just being racist and assuming that it's Blade based off the voice?
Well, one guy on Reddit also said it was Blade.
So it's us two and that one guy.
And Davey. So there's four of us. That's all we need.
Hope we don't get canceled.
How will Arishem saying he's going to judge the people of Earth, how does that play into it? Is there someone strong enough to fight a Celestial? Is that an Eros? Or is this how Adam Warlock comes into it, right?
That's a good question.
Guardians 3 in a year and a half or so. Is Adam Warlock powerful enough to fight a Celestial? I have no idea.
Do you need a second Celestial to fight the other Celestial?
I have no clue.
Can Doctor Strange do it if he has all of his dark powers?
Right. And are the Celestials even powered, or are there more powerful Celestials? I have no idea.
Would Doctor Strange and, say, Wanda be able to team up and do it?
Good question.
I also thought that since Stan Lee has passed, that Wong would be the character that shows up in every movie now. As like a cameo, and he didn't show up in this, sadly.
And then the final thing that I'm intrigued by, and I sort of have touched upon it, is the Thanos snap and the Avengers bring everyone back is referenced by Ajax. I'm wondering if that has affected also the Celestials. That half of the Celestials disappear? Did they all come back? You know, that blip that brought all the humans back, did it bring all life in the universe back? You know, there's sort of an unanswered question there. Eros being related to Thanos, does that mean the Celestials are going to go after Eros? I don't know. I think Eros being involved and the Eternals referencing the snap and the blip, I think that's all very intriguing.
I also like that Eros is pretty much being played by Mick Jagger. Like Harry Styles is playing him as Mick Jagger.
Yeah, you know, it's almost a stunt casting.
No, it is a stunt casting. It's absolutely
casting. I have no idea what Harry Styles' acting ability is.
No idea.
But I also think the character we saw on screen for 20 seconds, yeah. I think he can do that.
If he's like, hey, character is. Play like a mix of Jagger and like David Bowie. All right, sure.
He's just a cool character that has powers.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I wasn't turned off by Harry Styles being the MC.
No. And I was like, oh, cool, Harry Styles. I like Harry Styles.
Yeah.
I'm fine with
too.
It. So for me on this movie, 25, it gave us a couple of cool things at the end, but overall for the movie, kind of a slog.
I'll say 30, and I'm going to bump Falcon and Winter Soldier down a little bit because that's what I gave Falcon and Winter Soldier. So I'll say 30.
Let's get into Mac Sack. And Mac Sack could be anything. It could be a boat. Hey, Mac, how about for your sack this week? A little hot, juicy Hollywood gossip.
Oh, hot goss.
Hey, Mac, have you heard about this relationship between this Kim Kardashian and Pete Davidson?
I was actually going to tweet last night. At some point, we're going to have to start giving Pete Davidson credit as one of Earth's greatest swordsmen. I don't know what it is about him. Maybe he's fun to hang out with. I don't know. But from the outside looking in, I cannot find an explanation as to why he is gotten with so many of Earth's finest women. Maybe he's a Celestial. Maybe he's an Eternal. I don't know. I can't explain it. I don't know if anyone can.
I like the idea, I think, thrown out by Fred Tucher that he was able to get with one good-looking lady, and then the other ones are like, oh, he must be attractive.
They're intrigued, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, now once he's with one, now there's no embarrassment for others. But, like, he started off way back when with Ariana. He had Kate Beckinsale. Now he's teamed
Larry
up with
Larry David's
Kim
daughter,
K.
too, right?
Larry David's daughter, that's yeah. right. He also dated the girl from Girl Code, Carly Aquilino, who's mm-hmm. attractive in her own right. Is he going to start hanging out with Travis Barker now?
I think he has to.
I think he's already friends with MGK, isn't he?
Yeah.
Is that how they met, maybe?
No, they met through SNL. Apparently, and I read this in the old gossip column, that he was very supportive of her during that week on SNL, and he helped her with her jokes.
Well, number one, he's smart. Number two, she was pretty good. She yeah. was pretty good. So, James Gunn to your head, Sean Gunn to your balls. Her and Pete or Courtney and Travis?
Oh, Courtney and Travis stink. Give me anybody over those two.
Really?
Yeah.
I like Travis Barker, and I think Courtney is both the most attractive and most normal Kardashian.
I also hate the name Kravis. Have you met Kravis?
What about Chortney?
Also bad. Also very, very bad.
Well, what's Kim and Pete? Keet? Pim?
Pim. It'd be Hank Pym. All right. If you made to this point in the podcast, just tweet us and tell us if you liked the Eternals.
Don't you think it's sort of divine intervention that old butthole's eyes ends up with one of the greatest buttholes on the planet?
Well, we don't know about the hole. It's just the butt.
I mean, I've seen the video.
We didn't see the hole in the video.
You didn't zoom in.
All right, Mac, where can you find us?
You can find us on Twitter and on Instagram at Mac and Goo Podcast on every other platform. We are Mac & Goo. That includes Facebook, Stitcher, TuneIn, CastBox, Spreaker, Google Play,
iHeartRadio.
The most important platform is Apple Podcasts. Get on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to us. Rate us, review us 5 stars. If you do that, we'll get you a free T-shirt from the folks over at Watertown Sportswear. That's Watertown Sportswear on 34 Mott Auburn Street in Watertown. WatertownSportswear.com. Watertown Sportswear, expert screen printing and embroidery.
TeePublic.com. Merch. Go ahead and grab some TeePublic. That's a chunky shirt. All those shirts are just flying off the shelves. Stickers, magnets, notebooks. People are buying all this stuff. It's great.
And again, we're going to be back at Idle Hands in a week and a half, or maybe a week from when you're listening to this. We're going to be doing The Office trivia. That's right. The American television show, The Office, and Idle Hands, 89 Commercial Street in Malden, Massachusetts. That'll be Wednesday, the 17th.
And Mac, for the folks at home, who was on my shirt today?
Yes, there was also a question in the chat here. You're again wearing your Green Man suit, and on it is Chris Shime's Halloween costume, Ted Lasso.
Was it Ted Lasso?
Yeah, that's what he was going for.
Oh. I thought he was that Twitch guy.
Dr. Disrespect.
Maybe. Maybe I should have asked him ahead of time.
Maybe he went as a combo. I don't know.
Doctor, I don't have anything for it, actually.
Desiree, my friend Desiree.
There we go. All right, so thank you for listening. Check us out next week. We'll have a dump, and we'll figure out what we're doing after that. Tuesdays are Goose Days. I abuse kangaroos.
Bye.
Please flip the cassette over to side B to continue the adventure.